now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slam of pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change lane. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam show.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. Yes, it is the Pancakes and Power Slam show here on your Tuesday nights. We are here. Thank you so much for tuning in with Crave Wrestling Pancakes and Power Slams. Actually, I am here this week, unfortunately. Fortunately, in the same breath, Derek will not be here, a Raw correspondent. He is on assignment for this week, but he promises to deliver an action-packed double portion of Raw correspondence come next week. I will be here, but you will also be here with me with your calls, with your tweets, logging into chat. Let's make this very fun like we do every week. 347-884-8452 is the number to call. The chat room is open. Of course, we have trivia there if you want to start some civil wrestling conversation about AWA and Vern Gagne back in the 70s and 80s, or how the Misfits in Action was such a bad stable in the WCW, or how Taz was the Taz Maniac back in IWCCW. Something so random, go for it in the chat room. Otherwise, as the conversations will be brewing, I also will be delivering trivia questions as I do every week. Tweet at Crave Wrestling. Be sure to hashtag Crave Wrestling for any of your comments, and I'll be sure to say them on the air if they are appropriate enough to say on the air. So, as we do always, let's have some fun with this week's news. Maria, former WWE Diva Maria, currently in ROH, engaged to her boyfriend, her now fiance, Mike Bennett, who is also in ROH. Reportedly, they met on Twitter last year, and that led to a real-life relationship, and Maria got back into the wrestling scene and has became a very good valet, and ROH really honing her craft as a heel manager, valet type of role, and she's doing a good job, surprisingly. Still has a form of ditziness to her, similar to the old Maria, but at the same time, she came to her senses a little bit more in ROH as far as the character is concerned, and she is doing a good job. She had a small feud with Sarah Del Rey before Del Rey got signed for the WWE. Recently she was trying to, as far as storyline purposes, Mike Mondo had eyes on her. So she's been doing a great job, and Mike Bennett proposed to Maria, so they are now engaged. Unfortunately, sorry to convey this information, but many of us know by now that Freebird Buddy Roberts has passed away at 65 years old. His health over the years has been deteriorating, unfortunately. Some complications from, personal decisions. And unfortunately, he has passed away, but he would definitely be known as one of the triad of Freebirds, along with Michael P.S. Hayes and Terry Bam Bam Gordy, and it was the original Freebirds, and then eventually Jimmy Garvin joined the Freebirds. Ric Flair's wife files for separation due to, I believe TMZ reported this, quote, acts of illicit sexual behavior. In other words, frequent cheating. And this is Ric Flair's fourth wife. And so at 63 years old, he still can't find love the way that he wants to. So, you know, it's, either he's the true nature boy or he never was. So as far as the women are concerned, Rey Mysterio pulled from an upcoming upcoming WWE live events due to personal matters. So we definitely wish the best for Rey Mysterio and pray that we get that Rey Mysterio gets everything straightened out and to get back on board in the WWE programming. So we definitely thoughts and prayers are with Rey Mysterio and his personal life. And then finally, CM Punk gets surgery performed on him for a torn meniscus. Dr. James Andrews performed the emergency surgery. And basically, there is a replacement match on SmackDown. He will not be a part of the upcoming TLC pay-per-view. Just wrote an article about it on Bleacher Report on how I believe this is a blessing in disguise. And my reasoning, I may share a little bit on the show, but my reasoning for this being a proverbial blessing in disguise is on my latest article on Bleacher Report. So check that out, Chris Featherstone, Bleacher Report. And this is my reasoning on why CM Punk out of TLC is actually a very good thing. So log in the chat and, you know, brew some conversations if you'd like. Trivia is coming up. 347-884-8452 is the number to call. Tweet at Crave Wrestling. And those are this week's news. The first trivia question that I would like to give is, what gimmick was Matt Bourne in WCW? What gimmick was Matt Bourne in WCW? And if you don't know that, I may accept WWE. I don't know. Well, it depends. So let's go into Raw. If you'd like to call in live, 347-884-8452 is the number to call for your Raw thoughts. The flavor of the week this week is the five tag team wrestlers who received the short end of the stick, meaning that five established tag teams, one of them did not receive nearly as much success as the other one. So we'll talk about five established tag teams. And the one person out of the team that didn't necessarily receive the fame as the other person. So I'm sure that I'll name five, but if you can think of any more, feel free to tweet or call in or say it in the chat room. So let's go into Raw. Team Hell No, Kane and Daniel Bryan defeats the Primetime Players. Throughout the match, they were doing, you know, pan camera shots of the Shield, and eventually they kind of morphed their way to the ring, and then finally they do attack Kane and Daniel Bryan post match. I don't understand why they chose them unless they're trying to get a tag team titles. Or I mean, I don't understand why they have been such a focal point of their attacks other than Ryback. But all pans out. You know, we'll see. We'll see what that happens. Just watch SmackDown. Basically, that's the point. AJ defeats Tamina Snuka. Rolls her up. Don't think that this should have been a Raw match. I think that this should have been on TLC. They should have built this a little more. The attack was on a Survivor Series on the Big Four, and I think that this definitely should have been developed a lot more than just a match on Raw that resulted into a roll up from AJ. So, if anything, maybe Tamina could have had a disqualification loss. And that could have led to TLC, but the Divas Division. Speaking of the Divas Division, Eve is the Divas champ, and we don't even see her. You know, we don't see Layla, and Divas Division once again just bad news. CM Punk, Paul Heyman in-ring promo. Was very good, by the way. Interrupted by The Miz, challenges Punk to a lie detector test on Miz TV, and Punk accepts. I like the tandem. I like the chemistry between Punk and Miz, especially Miz as a face. I like it. If I had my choice, I would have booked this match for Royal Rumble instead of Rock and Punk. Because, one, we could have seen, I'm not too big on the Punk title, 379, about to be 380-day title streak. I'm not too big of a fan of that. I like Punk, all in all, I like Punk as a performer, but, surpassing, as far as this decade is concerned, or this quarter century, this generation is concerned, CM Punk being the guy as far as title reigns are concerned, I don't know. I'm not a big fan of it. I wasn't a big fan of Cena. I admittedly would pick Punk over Cena, but I guess they had to choose one person, and they felt like CM Punk was the suitable fit for that type of monumental achievement. So, kudos to CM Punk for that. But I do like CM Punk and Miz, and I do think that, because usually the Royal Rumble matches are relative throwaway matches to set up for Elimination Chamber and specifically WrestleMania. We've seen Mysterio and Taker. We've seen, I think it was Kennedy and Batista one year, Mark Henry and Kurt Angle. We've seen Hardcore Holly and Brock Lesnar. This year, 2012 Royal Rumble, was CM Punk and Dolph Ziggler. So, between the World Heavyweight Championship and the WWE Championship, I'm do some research on that and most likely write an article about it, but there has not been many title changes at the Royal Rumble, just because usually the road to WrestleMania, the person who has the title mostly just kind of goes on to WrestleMania with it. So I think Miz and Punk would have been a throwaway match per se, because I don't see The Miz winning, but at the same time, I do think that it would have been a good match to see Miz as a face, and I think it would have been a good match to build as well. Punk, The Rock came on July 23rd, the 1,000th Raw, and booked himself to main event at Royal Rumble, and so basically, it was mostly, the thought then mostly was Punk Rock. Of course, there was some Cena Rock 2s, but, their match was booked as once in a lifetime. So, I don't know. I think it was kind of, I've said it before, they've pigeonholed themselves for Punk and Rock. And so Punk streak, came with it. So, and it's been reported that that The Rock was very instrumental in CM Punk keeping the title, because he wanted to go on he wanted to fight Punk at Royal Rumble. So got a tweet here. It says, if and or when Punk loses his title, do you see more long sustained title reigns or more semi-quick title changes again? Good question. Very good question, actually. I don't see another, it'll be 380 days, so, you know, a year and 15 days. Cena's was, I can't recall the year. I think it was 2000 and, seven, when John Cena had that ridiculous year-long title reign that was over. I mean, it just about everybody wanted to see him lose. I'll get that confirmed here in a moment, but I believe it was 2007 that he had that ridiculous title reign. So, you know, basically 5 years later, if I'm right about that, 5 years later, you know, we get another one of those. And so if anything, you know, we probably will get another one, you know, five years away. I just don't see another long title run. I can't even think of anyone who would fit the bill as far as someone having that type of reign in the future. I can't think of anybody that would even, yeah, I mean, that would even do that. So 2006 throughout 2007 is when John Cena had the title. He had the title for 380 from September 17th of 2006. He won a, interestingly enough, he won a TLC match at Unforgiven on September 16th, 2006. And he only lost the title because he lost the title when he suffered the torn right pec on Raw. So because of that, he lost the title by injury. So it actually would have went until, I'm pretty sure it would have went to the next pay-per-view. So essentially he would have kept it, I would say, another probably 13 or so days. So he would have been upwards of 400, you know, for that. So that's saying if he would have lost the title at the next pay-per-view, which was October 2007. I remember they had two pay-per-views. I know one was like Cyber Sunday, and the other one was No Mercy. So No Mercy was on the 7th of October, and I think Cyber Sunday was in October as well, if I'm not mistaken. But I don't think that Cena would have lost the title at No Mercy. So we would have seen, you know, probably close to 400 days for Cena if he wasn't injured. So I don't think we'll see that again. If anything, we'll see more Sheamus-style title reigns, which I think is probably appropriate these days. Sheamus had it from April to he won at WrestleMania in April, and he lost it at Night of Champions. He lost it at Hell in a Cell. So he lost it in October. He lost it in October, and he won it in April. So he had it for around 6 months, 5 months or so. I think that we'll probably see that. That's considered a long title run these days. As far as the WWE title, I don't know. I can't think of anybody that could. I mean, Orton is just about done as far as the WWE title is concerned. Miz, Miz could have another title reign, but I don't see it happening for a year. I don't see it. I don't see it. 6 months or so would be good. Great question. Keep them coming. Tweet at Crave Wrestling or log on to the chat room. Ask them or call live 347-884-8452. Big Josh was the correct answer for what gimmick was Matt Bourne in WCW and Doink the Clown WWE. Who was the last WCW champion while the company existed? So the final Nitro, who was the last WCW champion at the final WCW Nitro event? March of 2001. If I'm not mistaken, it was March 26th of 2001. Maybe off, but I think it was March the 26th. All right, back to Raw here. Cena and Sheamus defeats Ziggler and Big Show. I don't know if I would have had a clean finish for this, but at the same time, I do understand why going further into Raw, why they did that. Because Cena's been pinning Ziggler clean too much lately. But it's from what it seems like Ziggler will get the win at TLC, which would be very good for Ziggler's resume. I did like the ending of the match when it was like the kind of synchronized attitude adjustment and white noise finish. So that was pretty good. Cena and Sheamus actually wasn't half bad as a team. I think Cole pushed them to the moon, but they actually weren't too bad as a team. Damien Sandow does his quiz again. Saw it on SmackDown. Quizzes someone from the crowd. Then Santino comes out and he quizzes Sandow and leads to a match. And then Damien Sandow defeats Santino. I guess this was the throwaway match of the night. I always have a throwaway match of the night that I call out every week, and the throwaway matches to me is just some meaningless match that doesn't have anything to do with anything. And I definitely think that this was definitely. Got some tweets here so far. We don't have the right answer. But this was the throwaway match of the night. But I mean, Road Scholars Cody Rhodes is injured, so Damien Sandow's back to us just beating mid-carders for the most part. And Santino Marella, I would really like to, if anybody would like to do this who's listening right now, you don't have to give it to me today, but email it at cravewrestling@gmail.com. See if you can find some type of win-loss record for Santino this year. I'm sure that it is awful and embarrassing. So, and it's sad too, because I like Santino as a gimmick. It seems like he was one of those gimmicks that was really fun to have and basically a mainstay for the WWE, because he's so he's just what the kids like. He's one of the Saturday Morning Slam guys. He's catering to the kids, but at the same time, they're just really misusing him as a gimmick now, as a personality. So they really need some type of Santino refreshment. I'm not a big fan of what so many people say too much. If someone's gimmick is getting stale, turn them heel or face. He doesn't need to turn heel. I don't want to see a heel Santino. But something. I mean, I'm sure that you know, they've got some top-notch people in creative. I mean, we haven't necessarily seen that in the past few years, but I'm sure there's some creative minds that could put something together for Santino. The real question is, do they even care? And from what it seems like the past year or so, the answer is no. So let's go on to Dolph Ziggler requests a match for Cena at TLC to Vicky backstage. Vicky accepts it. It did some type of Vicky says baby. Ziggler goes in for a kiss. So I don't know if they're going to, you know, expand that at all. Because they've been business associates for this long. They did have some type of romantic relationship in the beginning that was very edge awkward. I just think that with all due respect to Vicky Guerrero, legendary, you know, she's a member of a legendary family, you know, widow of the late Eddie Guerrero, has a job for life, is as long as she wants to be there, per McMahon, because of the tragedy. But at the same time, you know, it's rumored that she, but there's some strong reports to back that up. But at the same time, I think that romance angles and Vicky Guerrero should not happen, period. I mean, she looks, substantially better than what she did when she was with Edge. But at the same time, you know, please, no Vicky Guerrero romance angles. I'm even weary of her being in an authoritative role right now. But I do like the fact that Vince McMahon is kind of coming in every now and then to create the whole checks and balances type of deal. So I do like that. I think that is a good part of the authoritative role for Vicky, that she doesn't just go off and do whatever she wants to do. So I do like that much. But just no romance angles, please. Vicky does go into her office and sees Brad Maddox. Interesting to see him back. Maddox asks for a contract, and then Vicky says he could get one if he wins his match against a unnamed wrestler that Maddox would soon find out. Alberto Del Rio defeats Sin Cara. Kind of a throwaway match, but they've been wrestling. I mean, since Sin Cara's been there, they've been wrestling often. And I don't think Sin Cara's won a single match against Alberto Del Rio. One, if that, but I don't think so. Alberto Del Rio's character, you know, just getting really stale. And yeah, something similar to Santino, something has to be done with Del Rio. I mean, just every week comes out to the fancy cars that, you know, we know there's no one in the WWE that's that well off to have all those different cars every week. I mean, you know, no disrespect, but, you know, your legacy's in Mexico, and, you know, you were the man in CMLL, but I don't think that you were that rich to have that type of gimmick for this long, to bring in those many cars and all of that. So something just has to happen with Del Rio. His feud with Orton was actually pretty good. It actually was an uprise to his career that was just, it was just going down, you know, downhill. But I don't think that that established him enough, and something has to happen with Del Rio. Not being force-fed to us with some ridiculous push, but working his way up in some capacity has to happen. I'm not necessarily advocating a face turn, but if that needs to happen to give him some popularity again, as you know, period, something needs to happen. Vince McMahon and Vicky Guerrero in-ring segment, back to the whole checks and balances concept that I just stated. It was a good, really good idea, really good segment, in my opinion. Vince forces Vicky to book two matches. One was Cena and Ziggler from the Money in the Bank briefcase in a ladder match at the TLC pay-per-view. I think that's a great idea. I've said before that I think that the Money in the Bank briefcase should be utilized more. It should be defended. I know that he defended against Chris Jericho when Chris Jericho left his last match. I remember Kennedy having to defend it against Edge because he was injured. I believe there was a pay-per-view. I don't remember exactly the pay-per-view. Anybody, feel free to say the pay-per-view through Twitter or chat room. But it was RVD and Shelton Benjamin for RVD's contract, Money in the Bank contract. I know it was in the spring time, I believe, because he cashed it in and won it at One Night Stand. I believe One Night Stand was either June or July of that year. So it may have been like May or so. And at that point in time, they still had two April pay-per-views. They had two notable April pay-per-views, which was, of course, Mania, and then they had the April pay-per-view right after drawing blanks here, right after WrestleMania, because No Way Out was February. Backlash. No Way Out, February, and then WrestleMania, either March or April, and then Backlash at the April pay-per-view. And I believe Judgment Day was the May pay-per-view, the long-standing May pay-per-view for a number of years. So it was either at Backlash or Judgment Day that they had that match. So, it should be defended more. I mean, that's basically what I think. The Money in the Bank briefcase, I mean, not necessarily every month, you know, but I think this is a good idea for it to be utilized for these purposes. Next, we have Randy Orton defeating Brad Maddox. The second part of the second match that was booked was if CM Punk loses the lie detector test, there was going to be a match between Ryback and Paul Heyman on the next Raw. Orton defeats Maddox, so he doesn't receive his contract. Post-match attack by the Shield. Interesting choice for Randy Orton. There's been some rumblings of him wanting to become a heel in the near future. So, I mean, you know, I just thinking about this now, wonder if Randy Orton is a leader of the Shield. That may be an interesting concept. Maybe CM Punk, you know, because basically what they're doing is CM Punk saying that he has no direct association. Dean Ambrose or Daniel Ambrose is what Michael Cole called him on Raw. But Dean Ambrose, he also said in their interview conducted by Michael Cole that they don't have a direct connection with CM Punk anyways either. And they kind of – it's kind of, you know, they kind of make it seem like they have a connection. But, you know, you can swerve a little bit and have Orton be the mastermind behind the attack. So, interesting little concept there. I think everybody who's attacked has some type of history with minus Ryback. Daniel Bryan and Randy Orton. Kane and Randy Orton fought at WrestleMania. Daniel Bryan and Randy Orton. Don't have much history, but they have some on SmackDown when Daniel Bryan was the world champion. Yeah, so I think that's pretty interesting. Could be an idea. Just something to throw out there. Charles Robinson and Dolph Ziggler and John Cena appear in, separately in Vicky's office. Had a segment there. Antonio Cesaro, Kofi Kingston, Wade Beard, and R-Truth are in the ring because it was originally supposed to be a tag match with Cesaro and Beard against Truth and Kingston. But Teddy Long comes out on behalf of Booker T and says that one of is going to return to a Fatal 4-Way match. It's so funny. I mean, you know, I'll tell you what. I love Teddy Long, and it's just old school, super hype match announcing. It's just, you know, Teddy Long personified. So, yeah, it's pretty interesting that that they would have Teddy Long on there. And this is, you know, just the old school of me just, you know, love to see. I love the fact that Teddy Long is still around. I really do. And, you know, as of the past few years, he's been the brunt of announcing the Undertaker jokes, and I think that that's hilarious how he does that. You know, you'll go one on one with the Undertaker, and I think it's so hilarious. But he kind of did a real hyped match announcement this time too. So the Raw Active poll decided to whose title was going to be on the line, Cesaro or Kingston's, and they picked Cesaro. Great match, great Fatal 4-Way match. Cesaro ended in the Trouble in Paradise with to Wade Barrett. He's pinning Wade Barrett, and Cesaro picks up, kind of deadlifts Kingston and turns it into a neutralizer, kind of gut wrenches him up and puts him in a neutralizer. And I've said this since day one. I mean, I followed Cesaro for a while when he was Claudio Castagnoli in the Indies and ROH, and he's done a neutralizer before, but I just preferred when he did the kind of catapult you up and did the, you know, European uppercut. Because the neutralizer is just a weird-looking move. I don't think it's, like, sellable enough or catchy enough for a main eventer. And it's a little too intimate. And it's just a really weird executed move. I don't understand it. Booker T is the correct answer for the last WCW champion. Got another tweet here. I'll read a question. It says, after Punk's run with Nexus and Orton with Legacy, would WWE really want either of them as head guys of a faction again? You know, never say never with the WWE. You know, it's it wouldn't surprise me, honestly. It seems like Orton has to find some way to become heel. And if anything, I think the Shield. Because here's the thing: when Punk was with the new Nexus, it was just bad. Like the whole concept was horrible. It was just it was a knockoff. The original Nexus was so original, was so organic, and I think that just the new Nexus was just. I mean, it was just a really bad attempt to revive something that was poorly booked in the first place. Orton with Legacy, you know, same deal. I mean, they had something good going. They even had Sim Snuka in Legacy for a while, and Manu was in Legacy for a while as well. And then they just kind of dropped both of them. And... you know, it was just the three of them, and then that was poorly booked, and they ended up having a... It seemed like they were trying to turn DiBiase at that point in time, but Orton ended up taking the turn as a face, and they ended up fighting in a triple threat match at WrestleMania. So if it's properly booked, I think that... it could work. But even a Randy Orton, Randy Orton could join, could be the mastermind behind it, but he doesn't necessarily have to be affiliate with them all the time. He could be the one that's just calling the shots and then break off to his heel run and Shield do their own thing. So they can book it as if he doesn't come out with them all the time. And then after that, we get the CM Punk lie detector test at the last portion of Raw. The Shield attacks, interesting exchanges, verbal exchanges between CM Punk and The Miz. Punk usually overshadows and just, outwits everybody on the mic. We definitely saw that with Kevin Nash. Foley does a good job with keeping up with Punk, but The Miz seems like I don't think that CM Punk necessarily met his match, but I think that he's got, he's finally matched up with someone that could roll with him as far as the wittiness is concerned. He did a couple of interesting jabs there that definitely seemed unscripted. So I wouldn't say he got a, seeing the PG era, I mean, I'm in support of the PG era because, like I said before, it brings more creativity to gimmicks instead of just, having just profane catchphrases or just gestures or something like that that can easily rile up a crowd. It really puts the creative staff into more of a thinking tank to really hone in and develop characters. We've seen that with Randy Orton's character become so successful. We saw that with Chris Jericho's character become successful. So I think the PG era, it challenges the creative staff a lot more than TV-14. CM Punk, before he answers the last question, the Shield attacks The Miz and destroys The Miz TV set. Kane and Daniel Bryan comes out and attempts to make the save, but they get outnumbered by The Shield. Then Ryback comes out, and then the numbers are pretty squared up. They get the upper hand. They kind of go separately to different areas, and it's one-on-one. I think it was Kane and Roman Reigns. I believe it was Seth Rollins and Daniel Bryan. I think Ryback was beating up on Dean Ambrose. And then CM Punk kicks Miz out of the ring because Miz was already battered and beaten by The Shield. And so CM Punk celebrates, and somehow Ryback managed to come back from the crowd and get behind CM Punk and attack him. And when he turned around, got him in the shell shocked and started his weekly feed me more chance. I don't know. I mean, I'm still holding on to Ryback. Like I said, I was very, very skeptical with Ryback initially, but I got on board just because he's something new, something different. The electricity of Ryback with his mannerisms and just hard-nosed type of wrestling style is pretty cool to see these days, at least. It's probably closest to the Attitude Era that we'll see as far as wrestling style is concerned. But so I got on board, but at the same time, it's like, I mean, Vince McMahon is a big fan of him, and but at the same time, like, is he just a pawn in CM Punk's, WWE Championship streak? And if that's the case, he's definitely a flash in the pan. I don't even think a heel turn will work for him because, I think a heel turn could be equivalent to Tensai as far as having a good, I'm thinking of match Tensai because Tensai is probably the most derailed push that we've seen in quite some time. Speaking of that, this next week's Flavor of the Week topic is pro wrestling's fastest, pro wrestling's biggest or fastest derailed pushes of the decade. And of course, named Tensai, so he's undoubtedly one of them. But if Ryback turned heel, I wouldn't buy it. They were actually thinking about him being undefeated until he fought The Undertaker, possibly at WrestleMania. That would have been absolutely horrible, because The Undertaker is at the point of his career that he's definitely going to need some help. He's 46, I believe. I believe he's 46. But he's been dealing with nagging injuries for years, and he definitely puts his all in, the WrestleMania. But he's 47. He is the Undertaker, and then by next year's WrestleMania he'll be 48. So, if you're in good shape, you can still go. But at the same time, he's been nagging injuries, and being booked against Ryback at WrestleMania would just be awful. I mean, there's some reports of different scenarios that can be thrown out. I'm not going to say any of them because we don't have time to talk about them, and we just have to see how they pan out. That's what it really boils down to. So it was a good Raw. It was a good Raw, definitely one of the better Raws of the last half of the year. So definitely kudos to the WWE creative staff for writing this Raw. On to SmackDown. John Cena promo interrupted by Alberto Del Rio. Interesting to see Cena lead SmackDown and actually be in a match with Alberto Del Rio, which was actually a pretty good match. It was very long, too. Cena defeats Alberto Del Rio. Interesting sell, though. Del Rio sells the Cena leg drop off the ropes. I don't know if that's ever happened. So then Ziggler hits Cena with the case on top of the ramp while Cena's celebrating. We see a Kofi, Daniel Bryan, Kane, and backstage segment. We see some chemistry and some symmetry, I guess you can say, with Kane and Daniel Bryan. Both start yes chants and just gives each other accolades. Kali defeats Otunga. There's your SmackDown throwaway match. Kali is just another Saturday Morning Slam guy. And David Otunga is just what I've coined, no disrespect to him as a person, but as far as his gimmick is concerned, he is a jacked up piece of nothing. This guy has no relevance in the WWE at all these days, which he should, because the lawyer gimmick, like I said before, worked pretty good, and the assistant with John Laurinaitis is probably the peak of his career. I think that was actually more successful than his days with the Nexus and the new Nexus. I think his assistant to Laurinaitis was probably the peak of his career. Kofi and Team Hell No defeats Barrett and Primetime Players. Good match between the six of them. Matt Stryker interviews Sheamus. Damian Sandow cuts a promo and quizzes a crowd member and defeats Tyson Kidd. Matt Stryker also interviews Dolph Ziggler. 3MB defeats the Usos. I don't know if McIntyre has even wrestled on live TV. I know that a family member passed away and he was gone for a few weeks. But even before then, I think that for the most part, he's the one who sidelined. So, from what I've seen or what I've, I don't recall being told or seeing that he was injured or anything. So McIntyre just, I guess he's just the lackey, possibly. So, and then we have Sheamus defeating Dolph Ziggler, interrupted by the Big Show. Well, he beat him by DQ. He interrupted by Big Show, and the Big Show and Ziggler jump Sheamus, and then Cena comes out and makes the save. Not too bad of a SmackDown either. Interesting to see, like I said, Cena being so featured on SmackDown. I mean, that goes back to the old school days, like the Word Life Thugonomics John Cena, who was very much featured on SmackDown with his feuds against, you name it, Brock Lesnar, The Undertaker, Eddie Guerrero. So those were pretty pretty interesting John Cena moments. Question asks, early Royal Rumble favorite. My pick is Ryback. That's my guy. As far as the Royal Rumble is concerned, I think that the direction for Ryback is most likely what I see with Ryback is that he won't win the WWE Championship, because the best time for that to happen would have been Hell in a Cell. I think the Maddox decision just really kind of it really halted Ryback's momentum. I don't think it was necessarily a good idea, but it was I guess it was the best idea for Punk to keep his title. But I don't know. I think if there was any chance for Ryback to win the WWE title, it would have been there. Survivor Series would have still given Ryback a short reign as champ if they wanted to do that. But I think we kind of got the hints that Punk was going to keep this streak thing going. So if they want to keep Ryback up as an upper tier main eventer, the best way to go would be to win the World Heavyweight Championship. And through that, I would have him win the Royal Rumble and compete against the Big Show. So that would cause two things, actually. That would cause, one, Dolph Ziggler or John Cena, depending on who wins the match TLC, which I'm just about positive Ziggler will win. It would cause Dolph Ziggler, potentially Dolph Ziggler, to keep the briefcase for another, I don't know, 4 or 5 months for the Big Show to retain the title for that long, which would kind of be hard to book with the Big Show. And then, you know, Ryback, you know, feuding with the Big Show, and possibly Ziggler cashing it in on Ryback down the line and causing a feud with them too. So the two options is, you know, like I said, the two reasons or the two things that it would have to cause if Show keeps the title is that Ziggler would keep the briefcase that long, and then Show would keep the title that long. And I don't think either of those would happen. So it seems like Ziggler may be the one that Ryback goes for if he wins the Royal Rumble, and my prediction when he wins the Royal Rumble. So Ryback and Ziggler, I would not prefer over Ryback and Big Show, just because I think that they won't put on a good, of course they'll put on a better match because Ziggler, but at the same time, it wouldn't be as marketable because, honestly, you know, all the critics on Ryback, of course we would want to see if, even the antagonist would want to see if he could put Big Show in shell-shocked. So, of course, you know, the first And, you know, the first answer is no, he can't because he couldn't lift them 10 high. I mean, it seems like that will continue to be a topic, seeing how, you know, before and after that incident, he executed shell-shocked successfully. So it would be interesting to see if he can get Big Show in shell-shock. So if anything, maybe a Ryback win leading and maybe Big Show regains the title. Or, I mean, that's kind of pixelated right now, but Ryback would be my choice. Real quick, let's go to Impact Wrestling. Hulk Hogan in-ring promo calls out Bully Ray. Bully Ray talks to Hogan in ring, and then Brooke appears. Austin Aries talks to Hogan from screen, along with other X Division contenders. This is a Championship Thursday, by the way. The other contenders were Kid Cash, returning Kenny King, and Zema Ion. Aries says an inappropriate comment about Brick Hogan that prompts Hogan to go to the office. Mickey James defeats Gail Kim. Gail Kim is pretty much jobbing these days, and yeah, she left WWE, you know, because she wasn't happy with her direction, and just about instantaneously became both Divas. The Knockouts singles and tag team champion. She had a tag team run with, I believe it was Madison Rayne. I'm almost positive it was Madison Rayne. So she got, I mean, just a quick push. But, I mean, it's just the way of the business. I mean, if you're just not that popular at a point of time in your career, you're just not. And unfortunately, that's Gail Kim right now, at least. I don't know if that's ever going to kind of resurge, but Gail Kim is relatively expendable these days. Kenny King eliminated from contention. Bobby Roode cuts an in-ring promo, interrupted by Christian York. It calls out Bobby Roode. Roode calls him Rookie and Kid. It's interesting that he said that because Christian York is 35, and I believe Bobby Roode is 34, if I'm not mistaken. So, and Bobby Roode started wrestling. I mean, I think he started wrestling in 2000 or 99, something of that nature. He started wrestling in 98, so he's been wrestling for 14 years. He's 35 as well. So Bobby Roode and Christian York are the same age. So, you know, for him to call Christian York Kid and he's the same age as him, it's kind of odd. That would essentially make him a kid as well. So, yeah. But no matter what, Christian York has a couple of years up on Bobby Roode as far as experience, wrestling in-ring experience is concerned. So in that case, in that sense, comparatively speaking, Bobby Roode's the rookie. So that was a pretty interesting little tidbit that I got from that promo that they had. A good match between the two, though. Christian York's got a lot of potential. You know, he's been in the indies for quite some time, so he's really had a chance to hone his craft, and I think him and TNA is a very good move. Bobby Roode's about to hit York with the chair, but Hardy makes a save. They have a segment where the Aces and Nates talk. Devon demands TV title match at this coming Impact Wrestling episode against Samoa Joe for the TV title, which he says that he never lost, so he wants it back. AJ Styles and James Storm defeats Bad Influence, which is Christopher Daniels and Kazarian. I'll tell you what, Bad Influence is one of the most polished tag teams that I've seen in quite some time. I really like the duo of Christopher Daniels and Kazarian. They really mesh well together. as far as their wrestling styles, as far as their heel, you know, tactics, their heel antics, their mannerisms. Really, really, really good. And it seems like Daniels is a very, very good heel. I like him as a face, you know, just because I'm a Christopher Daniels fan through and through. But he's actually one of my favorite guys that came from the indies. But I think that he's really helping polish Kazarian more in an acting role. And I think his mic work is becoming better. Kazarian's mic work is becoming better because of Christopher Daniels as well. So they're really complementing each other as well. So it's definitely a good choice to keep them together as a tag team. Kid Cash, Zema Ion eliminated. Double elimination. I think that's the first time in Championship Thursday / when they had it in, on Open Fight Night. I think it's the first time in the history of the concept that it was a double elimination. Maybe mistaken, but I believe so. Austin Aries chosen. Matt Morgan defeats Doug Williams. Wes Briscoe gets a contract. Austin Aries defeats RVD. Interruption from... Austin Aries defeats RVD by disqualification due to an interruption from Bully Ray. So, interesting Impact Wrestling leading into this coming Sunday, their final resolution pay-per-view. So we'll see the go-home show this coming Thursday. Finally, as far as program is concerned, we got ROH this past weekend's episode of ROH. We saw the Briscoes defeat the Headbangers, QT Marshall defeat Adam Page, Prince Nana attacks R.D. Evans after the match. Nigel McGuinness books match with Prince Nana and R.D. Evans at the final battle pay-per-view December the 16th. And then finally, Michael Elgin defeating Davey Richards. So that was a fantastic match between those two. I've basically, you know, been highly supportive of Michael Elgin for quite some time. He's one of my guys in ROH, and the power bomb that he does is very potent. And very, very good match between the two. Typical ROH action. Very, very good. And, you know, just interesting to see the Headbangers back. They're in their early 40s. And I don't know. Seems like their heyday was 15 years ago. And even then, it wasn't necessarily a heyday. They were popular, but they... Still, then they weren't that good, but you know, it's good. It's good to see. You know, rationally speaking, it's good to see. You know, personalities like the Headbanger still have an opportunity to wrestle with a nationally recognized promotion such as ROH. So, you know, kudos to the Headbangers. I mean, I can't be too antagonistic toward the Headbangers. I wasn't a big fan of them in the late 90s, but at the same time, they were popular enough to be notable 15 years later and get a job at ROH. They were basically identified. How they came in ROH, they were identified as being the Guardians of Truth, being Truth Martini's guys. Max, the man that was feuding with the Briscoes. All right, let's go to the last segment. Any other questions or comments, feel free to tweet or chat. We'll get into more trivia next week. And then maybe the following week or a week after... haven't scheduled it yet, but we'll do quiz the host. So try to have that at least once a month or so, as far as I'm used to giving listeners' trivia, a series of trivia questions. Those are always fun. Also post trivia questions on the Facebook's site. So go to Crave Wrestling's Facebook page and like Crave Wrestling. Also just random trivia questions I'll pose on Twitter. So go to at Crave Wrestling on Twitter and check that out. Follow at Crave Wrestling on Twitter. But I don't know. We'll see. Maybe even as early as next week, but we'll see as far as when that day comes. We'll do it once a month, though. The last time was pretty fun. I think I may have only missed one or two, and I had a whole bunch of acts to me, so I was pretty satisfied with my showing the last time. So let's go on to the Flavor of the Week. Flavor of the Week is the five tag team wrestlers who received the short end of the stick. Once again, five tag teams, the last WCW champion while the company existed was Booker T. So, five tag team wrestlers who received the short end of the stick. So this is not like the top five, but this as far as like five, the one that I'm about to say, there's no particular order. So the first person I said is not number one or number five as far as like the worst or the best, but all five of these wrestlers are just in one big bundle of bad. So the first wrestler I'm going to say is Matt Hardy from the legendary quote unquote Hardy Boys tag team. Became very popular in the 2000s, early 2000s, with their initial triangle ladder match, which evolved into a TLC match with the Dudleys and Edge and Christian. They split up, and Jeff Hardy had a lot more success. Jeff Hardy became both WWE and World Heavyweight Champion. As well as a series of singles titles, Intercontinental title. But Matt Hardy, he had a Cruiserweight title feuded with Rey Mysterio. The best part of Matt Hardy's career is probably his Matt Hardy version 1 heel turn that he did. That's when we first heard the music. And he even had a no disqualification match against The Undertaker, and Brock Lesnar interfered. He actually pinned The Undertaker. It was like he's in the back. It was like an episode of SmackDown, and I don't even remember what year this was, but I can vaguely recall the match. Lesnar helps he helps Matt Hardy. I don't think it was intentionally for Matt Hardy. I think mostly because Lesnar and Taker was having a feud at the time, which I think led to the Hell in a Cell match late that year. But Matt Hardy beat The Undertaker, so that was probably the biggest moment of his career. And then further as a singles competitor, he became ECW champion. Had a good feud with MVP for the U.S. title, and they became tag team champions as well. But just really, compared to Jeff Hardy, just definitely not the, status that Jeff Hardy, had, as far as his career is concerned. He was so upset with his career that he basically protested to be released, which was granted. Next, we have Rick Steiner from the Steiner Brothers. Steiner Brothers is actually one of my top two favorite tag teams of all time. They're actually number two behind the Road Warriors. Road Warriors is my all. Road Warriors, Legion of Doom, my all-time favorite tag team. But Rick Steiner, though, he actually was in the NWA and became notable before Scott Steiner when he was with the varsity club in the late 80s with Mike Rotunda, Kevin Sullivan, Steve Williams, Dr. Def, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Dan Spivey had a short run in the varsity club, if I'm not mistaken. I'm almost positive that Dan Spivey had a short run with the varsity club. Get that verified in a moment. But yeah, varsity club, so he became popular. Yes, Dan Spivey was in the varsity club. But yeah, so he was, you know, he was popular with the varsity club, and then Scott Steiner comes along a short time after. And even then, I believe that he won some type of tournament finals to go against Ric Flair for the world title. And so Scott Steiner was a little bit more pushed than Rick at that time as well. And then, you know, they really honed their craft as the Steiner brothers going into the early 90s and had a short stint in the WWE and really made their name, you know, in the WCW, NWA. And then, of course, the Steiner heel turn goes to the NWO. Just kind of leaves Rick Steiner high and dry. I mean, Rick Steiner, similar to Matt Hardy, I mean, he achieved kind of marginal success. You know, he was TV champ. He was he actually had a heel turn late in his career towards the demise of WCW, and he had the U.S. title going into the latter stages of WCW, and actually lost to Booker T for the U.S. title. So, you know, I think he had a victory against Sting during his final heel run in 2001, I think it was late 2000, early 2001, around there. So, you know, it's still just minimal success as a singles wrestler. I mean, Scott Steiner became world champion and, you know, just was the face of the WCW towards the latter parts. And then finally, I mean, he actually had the title going to the last Nitro when he lost it against Booker T. So Scott Steiner achieved a lot more success than Rick Steiner. Although Rick Steiner was my favorite of the two, but Scott Steiner definitely achieved a lot more success. Number three, Marty Jannetty. Yeah, Marty Jannetty. Y'all remember, you know, his partner, right? Shawn Michaels from the Rockers. Yeah, it was that day in the barbershop when Shawn Michaels made his heel turn. And after that, Marty Jannetty just really became obsolete. And it's hard to say that, you know, because the Rockers were so popular in the AWA when they're the Midnight Rockers, and towards the late 80s they were really popular in WWE, although they never had an official title reign. But I'll tell you what, it was the heel turn that they made, that Shawn Michaels did, the barbershop pay-per-view in 91. Yeah, it was crazy. So there was allegedly some legitimate backstage animosity between the two. I don't know if it was money. I don't know if it was just booking direction. But they end up breaking up in the early 90s. Barbershop incident that they had. when Marjane was thrown through the glass window. So, yeah, that's basically how it went. Marty Jannetty had an Intercontinental title run after that on Raw. Was feuding with Shawn Michaels and he actually won the Intercontinental Championship on Raw in May of 1993. He won. I think he lost it like a week later. It was a few weeks later. I think like 3 weeks later or something like that. But regardless, it was just, a very low, very, very short run for Marty Jannetty. And Jannetty, he teamed with the 1-2-3 Kid. They had like a, underdog, team. They won the tag team titles too, but never really panned out to be anything of importance compared to Shawn Michaels. And to this day, it's really sad, but to this day, he still just harps on, he just complains and just gripes about Shawn Michaels. Mostly saying that he's beefing with him based on, him not showing him support over the years. Throughout the years and things of that nature, there was a recent report of him showing his ankle, and his ankle is really banged up and it's really swollen and looks really bad and deformed. But he said that he let Shawn Michaels know about it, and Michaels just really seemed kind of careless about it. But Marty Jannetty is, he's old enough, to not really blame anybody else on, his mishaps. Marty Jannetty's 50, I believe, 52 years old. So, he's got Shawn Michaels by, about 5 years. Michaels is, I know his birthday's in July, he's 47. So, he was a big brother to Shawn Michaels anyways, at least he was supposed to be, but, we really didn't see much from Jannetty. He had a really good match with Kurt Angle on SmackDown, and, Michaels kind of brought him back as a reunion of the Rockers probably once or twice in the past decade on Raw. They were for storyline purposes, but actually didn't look bad in the ring when they did reunite. And Jannetty, actually, that match with Angle actually got him a job as an agent for a while in the WWE. But saying all to say, definitely didn't match or come even close to matching the legacy of Shawn Michaels. Fourth is Jim Neidhart, Jim the Anvil Neidhart, and of course his partner was Bret Hart. Neidhart didn't even get. I don't even think that he received any titles after the Hart Foundation became tag team champions. The Hart Foundation broke up. Of course, Bret Hart became Intercontinental Champion. Had a feud with Kurt Hennig, and had a good feud with Ric Flair. Became World Champion, and just really carved his legacy as one of the best ever that WWE's ever had. Not even WWE, just period. He's one of the best wrestlers ever. I think that after the Hart Foundation breakup, he was just one of those guys, hey, we see a lot in Bret as a singles wrestler, but we don't see much of anything in you as a singles wrestler. So he just kind of bounced around. I know that he had a really short stint in the WCW. I remember seeing him in WCW around the early 90s. I think it was like 93 or something like that. And yeah, I remember he had an interview
in the WWE. I'm sorry, the WCW. He had an interview after like his first match, and he was just. As a matter of fact, I think his first match, his debut match in '93, was against. I think it was one of the gangsters, Mustafa. Yeah, it was Mustafa from the gangsters. But, of course, Mustafa from the gangsters, I mean, you know, he wasn't Mustafa from the gangsters, but I don't remember what his name was. But I think it was something Mustafa, if I'm not mistaken. But, I think that was either his first match in the WCW or one of his first matches in WCW. He cut a promo after that saying, like, you know, he's here for all the big names and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But that didn't go much of anywhere. So, you know, he came back in 94, you know, and he had that, you know, the feud between Bret and Owen. You know, he was instrumental in that for the most part. Then, you know, he went to, and then the reunion of the Hart Foundation in 96 and 97. You know, he was instrumental in that. But other than that, just nothing. I mean, had another run at WCW, you know, in the late 90s, but that was pretty much all we saw. I even think he was like under a mask. I think he was called Who or something like that. And it was pretty obvious that it, because he's, you know, no disrespect to Jim Neidhart, I liked him as a character. I like his laugh, his look, but he's got that. He's got that signature gut, and when Who, he was in the mask and he had the gear on, it was still one of those, you know, yeah, that is the body that only Jim Neidhart could have, you know what I mean? So, so it's unfortunate that he didn't do much of anything, you know, after the Hart Foundation. He's never had a singles title in the WWE or WCW. So yeah, he definitely didn't receive much of anything as far as notoriety or accomplishments outside of the Hart Foundation. And then lastly, before we close here, Stevie Ray from the Harlem Heat, team. Stevie Ray, real quick, it says, a couple tweets here. Thoughts on Matt Hardy talking about Hardy Boys coming back to WWE because they work in today's WWE tag team climate? Good question. I wrote an article about it on Bleacher Report. I think that they would, basically, check out my article on Bleacher Report about that. But the short version of it is, I think that they would work only if they're not the premier tag team. They've had their chance. They've had their shot. They were the premier tag team in the early 2000s, and so they shouldn't be like the tag team. And the other tweet I received is, didn't WCW try to make Anvil's debut return in 98 or 99 like a big deal? Yeah, and Bulldog was with them as well, and they both were like incredibly out of shape, surprisingly for Bulldog, but not surprising for Neidhart, but that didn't last long. So, and then finally, Stevie Ray, multiple tag team champions with Booker T, but, I mean, Booker T is one of the most decorated superstars ever, and, you know, his breakup from Stevie Ray really helped him because he became just a star. So, but as far as Stevie Ray is concerned, he led, like, NWO Hollywood for a second. That was just pointless. I think he was TV champion, but he was kind of like substituting for Booker T. And I think he had a, like, a, He lost it to Chris Jericho, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, I mean, it was just pointless. Just really not even worth, you know, recognizing, because it was kind of like a, you know, substitute. Booker T was injured, if I'm not mistaken. And, yeah, he lost it to Chris Jericho less than a month later. So, yeah, that's just about, I mean, that's the best that he had. He became like an announcer for a second, calling people yaks. That was kind of funny. But, you know, Stevie Ray just didn't do much of anything as a singles competitor. But Booker T just flourished. So he became, I mean, you name it, U.S. champ, Intercontinental champ. WCW champ 6 times, I believe, 5 times in WCW and once, the WWE's version of WCW, I think he had it once then, and then he had the World Heavyweight Championship once as well. So he's been a 6-time world champ. Definitely cemented his legacy as one of the most decorated wrestlers ever. So Booker T definitely, just exponentially greater as a singles competitor than Stevie Ray. So that's a great show today. Thanks for all the tweets. Thanks for all the answers through other avenues, chat, and all the tweets. Follow Crave Wrestling at Crave Wrestling. Like Crave Wrestling on Facebook. More trivia there. Check me out on Bleacher Report, Chris Featherstone, for all the articles. I just had an article up today about CM Punk status of TLC. Check that out. And until then, thank you once again. Just spread the word about Crave Wrestling. Let's get 4-digit Twitter followers. And I need all your help to do that. So go to Twitter and follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter, and let's just get a bunch of Facebook numbers as well. Let's get to the 5, 10, 15, 20,000s. There's a whole lot of trivia and a whole lot of news that you want to know about, and just interaction is just fun, and you definitely don't want to sleep on just the interaction that Crave Wrestling offers through social media avenues of Facebook and Twitter. So thank you so much. Until next week, have a great week. Enjoy your wrestling, and God bless. Goodbye.